The Project Zion team wants to send a huge thank you to all of our listeners for all the support that you've given us over the last year. Specifically, we're really grateful for the last month that we've been participating in the GoFundMe mission campaign. And we met our goal, which means that we're going to be able to expand our podcast and add hosts and editors and better equipment and just do things that will make our podcast better and be able to reach more people. So stay tuned because we're really excited to bring you more and better content. And just thank you, thank you, thank you for supporting us.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Project Zion. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts the Restoration offers for today's world. Project Zion is sponsored by the Latter-day Seekers team from Community of Christ.
And welcome to another episode of the Project Zion podcast. I'm your host, Brittany Mangelson, and today we have on Bethany Lloyd, who is a 70 in the greater Independence area. Her and her husband live in Blue Springs, Missouri, and we are going to talk about temples and the different aspects that come with your journey to the temple and what temple means in Community of Christ, and a little bit of what it means in the LDS Church, and kind of comparing this common word and these common buildings and ideas that tie us together. And so welcome, Bethany.
Thank you.
I'm really excited to have this conversation. And I guess we'll briefly just talk about, I guess, why we're having this conversation. And I will let you tell that story, a recent experience that you had with some Latter-day Seeker training.
Right. And as we get started, I really want to say that as we get into our discussion, I'm not a historian. And even though I've worked for the church in the past, I've never been like a World Church officer. And but, you know, like many members, I have kind of a unique perspective in regard to the temple and temple ministries. And so really just by nature of my life experiences, I'm just happy right now to be able to share those perspectives and that understanding. But actually, for me, my interest in temples has really been a part of my life for as long as I can really remember. And I guess that's really what pulled me into my recent participation in the Seeker training class that was presented by Apostle Robin Linkhart. So, yeah, recently I attended that class for the Latter-day Saint Seekers. And one reason I attended is because I really felt like it was important for my ministry as a 70. It's always been really important for me that no matter what congregation I was attending, no matter where I called my church home, that, you know, providing a way for a seeker to just come into our midst was so important. And I wanted that to be something that could happen with ease so that there was just, you know, people would feel accepted. Mm-hmm. So having that awareness of, you know, the kinds of details that Robin even brought about in the class, and also in bringing others on board within your own congregational group, has always been kind of really close to my heart. But I have to admit at times working with people in congregations and getting them on board is often very challenging. It's kind of hard to get others to respond, you know, and to think the same way that I do. And so, you know, there are times when, members might not feel that they're gifted in providing a welcoming ministry. And, you know, sometimes the opportunities just don't afford themselves to be present. And so, you know, people that you're working with in your congregation just don't have that experience in being that kind of welcoming congregation. So let's see, to get back to your question, I was really excited during the Seekers training to hear about ways that Robin was suggesting that we can make our congregational facility more welcoming. So things like using Facebook or having a website for your congregation, taking care of the physical needs, like having that that really important directional signage in your facility, things like that that provide resources to share some of the things that I really feel strongly about. But what really struck me during the Latter-day Seekers training session in particular was a video that Robin shared. And the video was called The Temple, Always in Our Sight. This was a video that went through a journey of some young women who were making a pilgrimage to the Manti Temple. And I was really struck by the 15-mile walk that these young women took. It was symbolically to experience what it really took to prepare themselves for a journey in making it to the temple, and really symbolizing for them the lifetime commitment to the lifestyle that they're going to live by forever. And I couldn't help but think about this kind of journey in my own faith walk and how similar it is, because sometimes, just like the girls, the journey is really tough and sometimes we're not prepared. And yet in the end, it's interesting how we sometimes really can receive that strength and, you know, get that renewed vigor in our step, which provides a more powerful testimony about our walk with Christ. And I saw that in those girls in this video. So there really was a point in the video where it was like I had to catch my breath, because during this 15-mile journey, there were many girls who had blisters on their feet. Some became so exhausted they had to actually stop. And yet through really pure determination, their journey ended in their ability to simply be able to place their hands on the outside of the temple walls. So their focus was on the future of being worthy enough to enter into the temple for ordinances that they would experience later in their lives. And a couple of the girls, even in the video, explained it as their way to happiness. So my experience has been so different, but yet in really so many ways, I feel like it's been so much the same. I've had some similar journeys to the temples in both Kirtland and now in Independence, but I've always felt incorporated into the heart of what the temples have been dedicated to. Like, our temple is dedicated to worship and education, and I've always been given a feeling of inclusion. So the temples to me are a place where God really becomes the center of our coming together as community, and where we're allowed to experience a wholeness of body and of mind and of spirit. And it's really a place where I can be fully immersed in the identity of a faith movement. Basically, it's really a reminder of the dedication of those who have really come before me.
Yeah, I really, really appreciate that. And the tie that it brings into the past too. And I guess especially with the Kirtland Temple has that feeling, but also the Independence Temple too.
Right.
So let's talk about your background with the church maybe before you went to Kirtland. So just, I guess, growing up, I know that you were a guide in the Kirtland Temple and that you lived across the street in Sidney Rigdon's home. But what got you there? And I guess, I mean, you can start wherever you want in the course of your life.
So kind of interesting. I have a sister, an older sister, who really loves to discover everything she can about our family genealogy. And so I've been allowed to kind of through her exploring, I've been able to make some connections with some of my earlier ancestors in the church. And so through her exploration, we've discovered that my great-great-grandparents were a part of the early restoration movement. They, in fact, helped in building of the Kirtland Temple, and they were survivors of Hans Mill. They made the trek from Nauvoo to Utah. And yeah, and so somewhere, and it's kind of lost in the history of my family, they left Utah and went to California, and that's where they joined the reorganization.
Oh, fascinating.
So as a result, I grew up in California. And in my junior year of high school, I very begrudgingly moved with my family to Independence, Missouri. And then a year later, I moved to Kirtland, Ohio. And when I got there, actually the history that I just told you about my ancestors, I was completely unaware of my family's history in Kirtland. So while I was there, I completely fell in love with that small town of Kirtland. And it was just a couple of years later I actually then moved all the way back to Independence, Missouri. So just kind of a round circle trip there. So going back, I was born and I lived in Fresno, California till I was almost 17 years old. And my parents were both very active in the church as I was growing up. And they both took on leadership roles in many capacities in the church. My dad was one of the first self-sustaining 70s, which means he wasn't a full-time World Church employee. And actually, that had been very typical of those who were called to the office of 70 up until about the late 1960s. I believe my dad was ordained about 1968, and that was a time where they started to have 70s become self-sustaining. So we had five kids in my family, and although I never knew it, we were really a family who had very little money. So there were seven of us who were living in a rather small house. And, you know, I guess it's because my parents' roles in the ministry in our congregation, but it seemed like whenever guest ministry came into town from places like Independence, Missouri, our family was always the one who was asked to house the guest ministry. I guess it was assumed we already had a house full, so adding one or two more as overnight guests was probably not a really big deal. And my gracious parents never said no. So we, when I was growing up, we had lots of apostles come through. We had World Church leaders come and stay with us. And there were many late night discussions that really gave my siblings and I a whole lot to consider. So in our small home where my sisters and I shared a bedroom, all three of us were in a very tiny room together. I remember so many nights my sisters and I had the greatest conversations. And one reoccurring topic, I think because of the guest ministry we had that always came to our house, was about the church someday building a temple in Independence, Missouri. And we knew that that was a really long journey from where we lived in California. Well, actually, I think my sisters and I misinterpreted what was really meant by the word journey as we would hear, you know, apostles and certain leaders talking about that. They were actually meaning the journey, you know, about the road ahead and the timing of building the temple. Well, my sisters and I, in our young understanding of what a journey was, we decided that we were going to need to start saving a lot of money because to go on that kind of journey all the way from California to Missouri, we were going to need to buy a lot of tennis shoes in order to walk to the temple. So, I mean, we were kids and we didn't have a driver's license. And I guess we thought we were going to be going on a really long walk.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. So, you know, little did we know that that journey really was going to take many more years to actually become a reality. And part of my journey with the Independence Temple many years later was actually living within a mile where it was being built. And I remember walking there after work with my husband and my own two little boys at that time, because we were so excited every day to get off work and go and see what was accomplished in the construction of the temple that day. And yes, I think we were wearing our tennis shoes.
So what was your understanding of what temple is, or what temple was, or what temple meant growing up?
Oh, goodness. Well, it was definitely a very special place. And it was something that I knew would be a place for gathering. I knew that it would be a place for, you know, certain types of ministry to occur. And, you know, when I was young and living in California, I had never been to, of course, the Kirtland Temple. And I'd never really been to a temple. So it was just my understanding of what I was taught as a young child and, you know, through Sunday school and different conversations. But I knew it was a very important place.
Yeah. I like that idea that, well, I guess when we were talking to Wallace B. Smith, when he was talking about the process of building the temple, I remember being surprised when he said we didn't really know what the temple was going to be for, what we were going to use it for. We knew it was going to be different than Kirtland, but we just knew that we needed to build it. And I actually really liked that, this idea that an entire body of the church can be excited about something and get behind an idea, but be comfortable with not really knowing what the end is going to be, but be comfortable in knowing that we're going to figure it out together and it's going to be beautiful because God is in this. And
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That changed temple for me a lot, which was good.
Right.
So let's talk about you being in Kirtland a little bit. So I think that you said that you had moved to Independence and then you moved to Kirtland. Is that right? And then
right.
Okay.
Yeah. So when I was in high school, we moved to Kirtland. It took me 4 different high schools to get through high school. I was in 9th grade in California. I went to another school in California for 10th grade. 11th grade, I was in Independence, Missouri. And my senior year of high school, I moved to Kirtland. So that was a lot of change during my high school years. But we get to Kirtland, and I have the opportunity to live right across the street from the Kirtland Temple in the Sidney Rigdon home. And my dad was actually hired to be a missionary 70 assigned to what used to be called the Kirtland stake in our church there. And so, you know, this was kind of, as you can imagine, it was a really difficult time in my life to make that move just 2 years earlier, being uprooted from my birth state of California and, you know, just living 1 year in Independence. And then my dad had a chance to kind of follow a dream and a calling to, you know, working for the church someday in his role as a 70. And interestingly, it turned out that upon our move to Independence, my mom actually ended up being one who gained employment at our World Church headquarters. And she was the secretary to the Church Historic Sites Director. And very quickly, later on, she became the personal secretary to the prophet president of the church at that time, Wallace B. Smith, who we know is the great-grandson of Joseph Smith Jr. Mm-hmm. So a pretty awesome experience for her. But in all that 3-year period, I moved from Fresno, California, and, you know, to Independence, to Kirtland. You know, talk about going from some really large school systems that I was in California and then Missouri. But Kirtland is very, very small. So any new kid moving into Kirtland in such a small town did not go unnoticed. And so coming into Kirtland High School, I was constantly being questioned, especially at the beginning of where did I come from? I mean, I was the new kid and it was so noticeable that I was new. You know, why did I move there? What were my parents doing? You know, what were their jobs? I had daily questions that I was having to answer. And I found it kind of funny that for such a small community, I really quickly found out how limited in understanding most were from Kirtland. For what their understanding was of the beautiful temple that was on the main road going to and from school. And I quickly became labeled as the Mormon girl who went to the temple down the road. And at the beginning, I just really could not have felt more ostracized. Here I was. I was the one who had just moved there with a personal knowledge of what this temple really meant. And suddenly I realized I really was looked at as like an expert compared to many who had lived in Kirtland their entire lives. So my family and I, we lived in the Sidney Rigdon home, and it really gave me a unique perspective, a unique view of everything that was happening at the temple. We were able to observe, you know, not only the daily care, the maintenance, all the activities that were on the move as a part of the daily life in this, you know, really a peaceful, quiet community of Kirtland. And one of my favorite activities while I was living there became any time that we were able to go into the Kirtland Temple to either explore or go for a worship or even share the Kirtland Temple with visitors who came into town. And even today, you know, words really can't express the deep-rooted history that I always felt just stepping into the doors of the Kirtland Temple. So when I knew that you and I were going to be talking today about the temple, I thought, oh my gosh, I've got to go and dig up an article that I wrote many years ago for a church publication. I was probably about, I don't know, maybe 20 years old. I was in college. And I tried to, in this article that I wrote, I tried to explain the structural details of the temple. So, you know, if anyone had not had the opportunity to go there, I was trying to explain it for them. And so I pulled out this quote that I thought was kind of interesting that I said back in my 20-year-old mind. And so this is what I said. The outside to me is only a sample of the beauty and simplicity within its walls. There's a power there which reflects the history and quietness in the small town of Kirtland. The beautiful worship experiences I had inside this building and my quiet evenings alone staring out my bedroom window shall always have an impact on my life. So I think really within my statement there, it just, I remember, I just really loved my time in Kirtland.
Yeah, that sounds so beautiful. I remember my connection with Kirtland is I went on an LDS church history tour when I was 14. And
right.
I was just an arrogant little soul. And we started in Palmyra and then worked our way west. And
right.
So Kirtland was one of the first places. And we did this all in 1 week. And so I didn't think I was going to feel the spirit in the Kirtland Temple because it was owned by you guys. And I, like I said, was super arrogant. And I was very, very confused at why and how I did feel the spirit. And oddly enough, I'm pretty sure that Locke Mackay was my tour guide the first time I met Locke.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure, but we figured out what year I was there, and he said, yeah, I was a Kirtland
very
tour guide
possible,
there.
Yeah.
And I met him at Reunion, my very first experience with Community of Christ, and I felt like I knew him and I recognized him somehow. I don't know. I'm not into, like, things like that, but it was just one of those, like, I know you.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and we all sang the Spirit of God, and I remember just being completely blown away at the spirit. And it was it was odd because I didn't know much about LDS temples at that time. But I knew that it was different from the Kirtland Temple. And I knew that the LDS church didn't own it. And so all of these things that you tell yourself thinking that, you know, my church is the one true church. And then suddenly you have this amazing spiritual experience, spiritual awakening in this place that you are not expecting it to happen, was good. And one of my first temple experiences. So when you were there, did you get to interact with a lot of or any of the groups that were going through? Because I know that Community of Christ and LDS tour groups and different retreats and people come through. Did you have a lot of interaction with the visitors at the Kirtland Temple?
I did, yes. And, you know, I really learned so much during especially the 2 years that I was in Kirtland. And yes, I was a, they called it a historic interpreter, which is really a fancy way of saying that you are a tour guide. And so, you know, I recognized that the majority of visitors really that came to the temple were really from the different faith groups who shared the history that began there at the Kirtland Temple in the 1830s. So I was really amazed at times at the long distances that many had traveled just to experience this piece of history. From a variety of faith groups. And it, just like you were saying, you went there at age 14. I think there were many, many groups that came to be on a similar journey, a similar pilgrimage, because it held significance, not only for discovering, but also in experiencing and more so in defining their own faith journey and really connecting it to the history that began so many years ago. And I was thinking, just like one of the young ladies in the video that Robin Linkhart shared with us that I mentioned earlier, at times, you know, Kirtland was a part of many of the Restoration family's pilgrimages. And so I think that's just a part of that journey. And I probably, when I was there as a guide, I probably really didn't understand that is happening in many of the families that came there. I didn't realize the effort that many families were going to go and retrace the history of their own personal faith movement. And, you know, during my time there also, I was guiding there with other college guides. We were all about the same age. And we had some really great discussions. And we also, at the same time, we were required as part of our duties as being guides. We were taking a church history class about Latter-day Saint history and the era of during building of the Kirtland Temple. So the Mormons who came through for tours of the temple really were, by and large, very respectful and very reverent upon approaching and really entering the temple. Some were actually surprised, like you said, that it was owned and maintained by a group other than the Mormons. Some had never even heard of our faith movement. Some Mormon families, I remember it was almost kind of humorous, but the parents would lean over to their children and tell them that this temple was just a replica of the Kirtland Temple, and we had come in and rebuilt it. And, you know, it was like, oh, no, 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 no. This really is the original structure. And I think that caught some people off guard, too. A few came, and they just really, I think, love to engage in the challenge of theology rather than really coming to experience the history and really just the awe-inspiring place of worship and prayer that it is. So because I was taking a church history class during my time as a guide, in fact, this class was taught by a professional historian. His name is Roger Lanius. Because of the class that we were taking, my own convictions at times were really challenged very deeply, not only by people who came through the temple and the kinds of questions they would ask, but Roger also really challenged us. And I discovered through that process that church history is messy. And, you know, it really relies on a lot of different perspectives. And it created in me a sense of really wanting to learn more and just really wanting to understand better about what I was being taught and what really was the truth deep within the history of those historic walls. So we would end each tour with any group that came through, but we would always end the tour with an invitation to just sit in the main temple sanctuary for personal reflection and prayer if people wanted. And it seems as though the Mormons and those from Community of Christ were always the ones who wanted to stay and just take in time to pray in this special place that was called House of the Lord. And I know when I look back on the years that I've had interactions with Mormons, and as I gleaned small understandings about our similarities and our differences, today I really recognize a long shift that has taken place in the faith movement and Community of Christ, and really our approach to interacting with those in the LDS faith and as well as other faiths. And I feel like we've moved from really taking all that time to do the proof texting and saying that, you know, we're the one true church, to today, I really feel like our focus is more in the discovery of that exploration of the authentic faith.
Yeah, when I was researching Community of Christ history and trying to figure out exactly how the church got where they were today, I didn't realize how head-to-head the two churches had been. I mean, I'm a young person that grew up in Utah,
and
there actually was a Community of Christ building pretty close to my house, but it wasn't like, I didn't pay much attention to it. But the knowledge and understanding of how much Community of Christ has had to go through and discover and discern inwardly and outwardly, to have these kind of dialogues with other denominations in the Restoration, specifically the LDS Church, is huge. And so for me, you know, being a relatively new convert, Latter-day Seeker, whatever you want to call me, I really am appreciative of the work that has been put into essentially accepting people like me, especially because I'm a quote-unquote Utah Mormon, which kind of has a different flavor to it, I guess, than maybe some other places, because Mormonism is so saturated here. So, the historic sites and these places that we share with the LDS Church to one degree or another, whether it's, you know, being properties right across the street from each other, or just the common love for the Restoration, like at the Kirtland Temple. Although the LDS Church does own property in Kirtland too.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, it's such an interesting dynamic. And I haven't been back to any of the church history sites since I was 14. On that church history tour, we did go to Independence, but we primarily just stayed at the LDS Visitor Center right there that's across from the auditorium. And then we visited Far West and Liberty Jail and things, you know, in the surrounding areas. But we didn't do any Community of Christ stuff in Independence. So when we went back for World Conference, it was my first experience with Temple after coming into Community of Christ. And I was actually kind of nervous about it. I knew that it was completely different from, you know, an LDS endowment, but it was still kind of just like this zinger word that I'm like, oh, I don't know. Why do they have to call it a temple? Oh, I don't like temple. But
I'm sure.
But it really was a full circle moment for me. And then being able to interview Wallace B in the temple, that kind of sealed the deal for me because the two traditions view temple very, very differently. So while you were a tour guide at the Kirtland Temple, what did the temple mean to you, or just temple in general? And did you have any idea about what happened in LDS temples, or your understanding of that as you were taking Mormons and Community of Christ and just a variety of people through the Kirtland Temple?
Yeah. So while I was living in Kirtland, I was in complete awe of the temple. And I have really some permanent memories that will always be a part of me. There were times that my family and I, we would travel out of town because my dad would be asked to offer ministry over a weekend. And I remember so well traveling in late Sunday nights and pulling off the interstate. And we'd get onto the Highway 306, which is the street that the temple is located on. So there's this really big hill that goes up toward the temple, and suddenly you see the temple coming into view with the nighttime lighting shining on it. And the temple just, it really just seems larger than life. And I was always so absolutely overwhelmed by the beauty of the temple. And so on those trips, if I'd fallen asleep on the trip, I knew I was going to sleep, I would always say to my parents, please wake me up before we get into Kirtland, because I don't want to miss seeing that part of the trip. Because actually, it never got old, being able to see that view of the temple. And when I graduated from high school, this is kind of a funny story. I felt like the temple was so much a part of my life. I lived there. I was right across the street. I had guided there. And I truly did honor and respect all the people in Kirtland who cared for every single detail about the temple. Those who cared for the flower gardens, the lawn care. In fact, there was signage around the lawns that requested people staying off the grass. But on my graduation day, in my cap and gown, I went and I said, I'm going to stand on the lawn and I want my pictures taken on the lawn in front of the temple, because that's how much a part of it, of my life it really was. So it really meant a great deal to me. Your question about LDS temples. My understanding of Mormon temples was something that I had been taught about. So, I kind of had a basic understanding of the different types of ordinances that were provided to its members. And my understanding and awareness were definitely heightened during my time in Kirtland, because I was, really directly involved in providing information and answering questions the best that I could through the guidance and direction of our historic sites directors. So from a Latter-day Seeker's point of view, I think really the easiest way to explain, the Community of Christ Temple ministry is really, to me, it's about inclusiveness. So the Community of Christ ministry, since it's one of inclusiveness, our ministry in the temple really reflects our theology of God. Because I believe in a God who views all people as having equal worth, a God who wants all to experience the wholeness of body and mind and spirit. And, really, what a great place to receive that blessing. So whether it's a personal journey to the temple or for a community worship, the temple really, in essence, is at the center or at the heart of what it means to be in community. It really brings about a focus on establishing, really meaning and giving an identity. It's a common ground for coming in and really then going out into our own communities with God's Spirit on the journey. And so with this comes Christ's call to be dedicated to what we say, the pursuit of peace and the healing of the Spirit.
Ah, and I guess that is what I experienced the moment that I walked into the temple in Independence. It was right before World Conference was starting, and we had all these interviews lined up, and we were a little bit late and kind of rushing, and I was stressed and trying not to think about what we were about to do. And all of a sudden we walked in, and I mean, it's, quote unquote, just the foyer of the temple, but it's beautiful. And just this,
yes,
this spirit of peace. And I've been asked before, if I thought that the Community of Christ temple was as beautiful as LDS temples. And it's interesting because my answer to that is it's more beautiful. And I don't think that someone that hasn't been there might not understand that if they've been inside an LDS temple. Those buildings are very ornate. They're the, you know, the best of the best. We're talking like granite and marble and, you know, super fancy lighting fixtures and everything. But we spent pretty much the whole day. This was the day before World Conference started. We basically spent the whole day in the temple. And the people that we were able to meet, some that we had known online, but some that we were just meeting for the first time. I mean, it was such a holy, sacred experience. That it suddenly doesn't matter what the countertops in the bathrooms are. I mean, even the bathroom, I was, and maybe I've shared this on the podcast before, but I stepped into the bathroom really quickly before we started our podcasting interviews. And suddenly I'm sitting there washing my hands and I hear a, "Are you Brittany Mangelson?" And I'm like, It was Kay Fletcher, and it took me by surprise, and I immediately recognized her. We've been Facebook friends for a while and have talked back and forth on Facebook a little bit, but just that, like, just humanity, you know, just like that feeling of, oh my goodness, this is community. And we gave each other a giant hug, and our hands were still wet because we hadn't dried them yet. And it was such a good moment. And a moment that I'll never forget. And I, you know, it was in that moment that I thought, like, this is peace. This is community. This is temple.
And a great example of that inclusiveness of, it doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, we all come in together. And we build that community.
Exactly. And I mean, I just felt like, you know, this little nobody that was about ready to interview like Wallace B. Smith. And I was, you know, had like clammy hands, and I was, you know, just terrified out of my mind. And then to just meet Kay Fletcher in the bathroom like that was, I mean, it could not have been a better, more perfect moment and perfect meeting. But to me, that's
a great story.
That's what temple is to me.
Exactly.
Which is great. Okay, so you finished up with your tour guiding in Kirtland, and then you moved back to Independence. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes. In fact, I spent 2 years in Kirtland, but one of those years I was actually in college back in the Kansas City area. And so whenever I would go home, Kirtland was my home. So I really spent 2 years there, in and out of that second year, you know, coming back and forth between beginning my college years.
Okay. And so, I mean, at this point, the Independence Temple was not yet built. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And so I guess in Independence, was there buzz about building the temple? I'm not really clear on how, I know everybody knew that a temple would be built in Independence, but did people expect that it would happen that soon, or did you expect that it would happen when it happened?
Yeah, you know, in fact, I was talking about earlier about, you know, my sisters and I even, and getting so excited about all the conversations taking place, and that was, you know, the late 1960s. And so it began to be something that was talked about quite a bit. And it just became more and more something that whenever we would gather for world conferences in our congregations, we would just, you know, it was something that we knew was going to be happening soon. So, yeah, there were lots and lots of discussions, and direction were becoming much more a part of any of our gatherings, both locally, you know, and at world conferences. You know, it was just that buzz of the Independence Temple was really going to become a reality. And so, you know, discussions that had been going on for many, many years, you know, remember I was telling you about my sisters and I even talking about how we were going to go on that journey in our tennis shoes, but now it really was feeling like it's going to be any time. And so, you know, all we knew was that the temple in Independence was going to be built. And really, as a people, we were just waiting on further instruction and understanding for what the temple was going to look like, what it was going to be used for, and, you know, it really its exact location. So this is kind of funny. Fast forward to the late 1980s. My husband David and I were sitting in a world conference evening worship up in the side balcony of the auditorium. And we happened to notice just a couple of rows in front of us were seated President Wallace B. Smith and some of the other members of the presidency. And we noticed that right between them seated was our newly hired architect. His name was Gio Obata. And so the church had hired him. And we ultimately were really relying on him for developing kind of a design that would really be representative and symbolic of our faith movement. Well, David and I really began focusing on this architect instead of really listening to the worship because we were just so intrigued by watching what he was doing. He had out a sketch pad in his lap. And he just started drawing circle after circle after circle. I mean, it was like all these circles on his sketch pad. And we noticed that once in a while, he would look up at the ceiling of the church's auditorium there, where we were seated. And the center of the auditorium is this large oval shape. And we began wondering as we would watch him go back and forth between his doodling of circles and looking up, we thought, you know, is he taking on some kind of a shape in his drawing, or, you know, is he just kind of, you know, people doodle while they're listening. And so during the worship, was he just doodling? So I'm not really sure how much time went by. It might've been about a year, but pretty soon the church was presented with finally the early designs of what the Independence Temple was going to look like. And everybody was so excited to finally be able to get their first look at this. And I'll never forget the day that I stopped by my husband David's office. He was a youth minister in the church. And I guess by nature of working at the church office, the design had come out. And so, you know, the members of the church were beginning to take their very first look at these new drawings of what the temple would look like. David called me in to his office because I stopped by and he said, "Hey, do you want to see the new temple design?" I was so excited. I was like, "Oh my gosh, you've got to be kidding. They're in." This really was a day that for me personally, I had waited for and I had thought about for so many years. And I was standing in this moment and realizing, "Oh my gosh, this is going to come true. I'm going to actually even see what the temple's going to look like." So a temple in Independence, I couldn't believe it. I was actually living in Independence at that time, and I was going to get to be there and see this all come together. Whereas, you know, in my child's mind, when I was in California, I thought, "Oh, it's going to be such a long journey." But, you know, here it was. I was actually living there, and the drawings were coming out for what the temple was going to look like, and I was there. So David brought out the drawing, and I stood there, and I absolutely had no words. In fact, I think I actually opened up my mouth and I probably scrunched up my forehead and I was really, really confused. I wondered how this spiraling, almost circle-like building was a temple. I mean, I knew what a temple looked like. A temple was a really large rectangle-shaped building, you know, like the one in Kirtland that I'd become so familiar with.
Yeah.
I'd been to the Salt Lake City Temple and I knew what that looked like. I had walked the grounds of the very foundation of the Nauvoo Temple many times, and they were all rectangles. And so I was just struggling. I really didn't know what to think of this drawing. I didn't know what it all meant. And then I know quickly I learned that the spirals and the circles, just like the Nautilus, they're, you know, those are shapes that we find in nature in various forms. And it really represents the spiraling of the going outward and the upward, which is really what the temple symbolizes. It's the inner and the outer journey of our lifelong pilgrimage. And to me, it's really God's calling to us as disciples. So, you know, the shape that was taking on a representation, to me, I thought about all the people that would be coming from different walks of life and really, in essence, becoming that inclusive place for all to come and be a part of the living Christ. So temples today both speak to my, both of the temples speak to my journey. The Kirtland Temple has its honored beginnings and it really provides a place for reflection of our faith. And, you know, today the Independence Temple is, for me, coming full circle. It's a place to call home and to contemplate our future. And, you know, it's not to say that that can't happen in both the Kirtland Temple and the Independence Temple, but the Independence Temple also provides a place to worship God, a place where we can learn more about really what it means to be a disciple of Christ. It's a place to connect with who we are. It really brings about our identity, as well as helping us to remind ourselves of a God who calls us to experience life to the very fullest while we're on our journey of faith.
Thank you so much for that. I had the cheesiest, dorkiest grin on my face the entire time you were talking. Picturing you guys in the auditorium. And it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I remember the very first time I was in the auditorium, you just automatically look up. I guess that's what we do in Community of Christ buildings. And I thought, man, this church really has a thing for ceilings, and I like that.
I know, right?
Yeah, and I love the roundness of everything, and I can completely understand how that would be, you know, almost alarming at first, especially if you have this idea of what temple should look like and what temple should be, and especially if you've experienced so much in the Kirtland Temple. But for me, I mean, it was different enough to be exactly what I needed.
Yeah, exactly. So in regard to the design, you're exactly right. And you said something cheesy. I'll say something cheesy. Once I was able to make all these discoveries about, you know, the symbolism and the design, what it looked like and what it all meant, I began to realize that maybe we were, as a people, being called to kind of think out of the box. Because all the other temples were kind of this rectangle shape. And, you know, this was very unique. It was very different. And I love thinking about that. You know, we were called to think out of the box.
Oh, I love that. And I think that it's hard to describe. It's hard to put in words what that actually means. Because from my perspective, it's the entire identity of the church. I mean, it's us reinventing what it means to be Christians. It's us reinventing what it means to be part of the restoration, and maybe reinventing
exactly.
isn't the right word, but just rediscovering and reexamining and seeing where is God calling us to be and who is God calling us to be. And that's all over the place in the symbolism of the temple in Independence.
Exactly.
And I love that how you said, you know, kind of that the Kirtland Temple connects us to our past and that the Temple in Independence can connect us to our future. I thought that was beautiful.
Right. Right. And they both still have a purpose.
Yeah, exactly.
They have purpose and meaning. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So one thing that I didn't get to experience in the Independence Temple, and it was mostly just due to logistics of the time that it happens and the time that I needed to get my children back to their daycare after lunch, but it's the prayer for peace. And I love the idea that every day in the temple at 1 o'clock, there's a special and sacred little service where we pray for peace and we specifically uphold a country and our nation. And we do this in our congregations on Sunday. We've done prayer for peace at retreats and different gatherings like that. Do you have any thoughts on the significance of that, or have you been able to attend many of those services?
Yes, I've attended the Prayer for Peace on occasion. I don't get to by nature of my job every day as a school teacher, but periodically I've been able to go. And I know my husband David has also been the person who prepared, you know, Prayer for Peace. He would be the person up there who would provide that ministry for whoever shows up in there. And yeah, it's an amazing everyday occurrence. I love the idea of, you know, every day there's maybe a different country or a different event that's being prayed for. And, you know, it doesn't matter if 5 people show up or, you know, 300 people show up. They do that every single day very faithfully. So I think that's a really amazing ministry that the temple offers.
Yeah. And then going into the sanctuary, just right there off the main front doors, is the Worshipers Path. And there's
right.
The different stations at the Worshipers Path or different spots are featured in several Community of Christ videos, or you can Google image pictures of them. Maybe we'll include one of them in the link to this episode. But I love the Worshipers Path. And the first time I walked it was actually with Linda Booth. She came and just happened to find my family in the temple and gave us a quick tour, kind of a behind the scenes tour. And it was amazing to, I had all three of my kids with me, and I kind of stepped back a little bit, and somehow we were the only ones on the Worshipers Path. And I just watched as Linda Booth, man, I didn't think I was going to cry.
Right.
I watched Linda Booth take my kids up through the Worshipers Path, and she explained all the different spots, and it was beautiful. And then we just sat together in the quiet sanctuary. I mean, quiet as quiet as it can be with three little kids. But it was remarkable. Right. And it was in that moment that I really feel like I kind of just knew that the temple in Independence was truly a house of worship and a house of peace.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, it's interesting because just like you're saying, you had that opportunity to approach the Worshipers Path, probably not really having time to prepare. I mean, you probably didn't give it much thought to say, oh, I'm going on the Worshipers Path and I'm entering, you know, the temple sanctuary. And, you know, that's so true of so many people. You know, often our preparations for going into the Independence Temple, sometimes we know weeks in advance because we know that we're attending a special event or a special worship. And at times our preparation, you know, it might be going in and just saying, oh my goodness, I'm here. Maybe I wasn't expecting to be here right now, and just kind of offering a prayer as you enter. But the Worshipers Path, it's just an amazing experience. And it's, you know, it's like our faith, that the basic elements that we experience in the temple really could be experienced, you know, really in any congregation. But in the temple, it's a reminder of how we should prepare for everyday faith and how they can be lived out on our faith journey. And so, you know, going on the Worshipers Path that winds upward, and you're really going by you know, sometimes some amazing pieces of art that are being displayed there, or sculptures. I love the part of the prodigal son. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think one of the most inspiring pieces of the Worshipers Path, whenever I have an opportunity to walk it, is when I finally get to the top and I see that granite pool, that's just barely filled to the brim and it's overflowing. And it's just so peaceful and so quiet. And it reminds me of, you know, really God's love. It reminds you of, you know, maybe the waters of baptism. And it really is a reminder that it really is spiritual water that's available for anyone who enters the temple. And I absolutely love that part of the Worshipers Path.
Yeah, me too. And then just a few steps away and you enter into the beautiful sanctuary and I mean, looking up and seeing, you know, the inside of the shell, and it's so beautiful. And I mean, the first time I saw it in person, I don't know how to say this without making it totally cheesy, but it's almost unreal. Like it almost, like when you're in Disneyland and you're in Toontown and it just all seems so like you're in a different world, I guess.
Right.
Not that I'm comparing the temple to Toontown, but
no, but just, I understand what you're saying.
When you're in this environment where everything is just so out of this world and so unreal, and it's this is a good thing.
Right.
That was my experience. And I know that a lot of people, LDS people, have similar experiences in the celestial room in LDS temples. And I never did. I never got that. And I always felt like there was something wrong with me. So I came to the temple with a lot of angst, I guess, unresolved angst in Independence. But seeing Linda, take my kids up that path, and then being in the sanctuary with just the five of us, and the lights were off, and there was nobody in there, and but you could just see, you know, the light shining through, and the just the brightness of it. Right. It was remarkable. I can't describe it enough of how good it was to be there.
Yeah, that reminds me of your story of meeting the person in the restroom. You know, the people that you encounter, and they just take you in and embrace you, and you're made a part of, you know, the community that takes place there in the temple.
Yeah, exactly. And then from there, when we did take the tour, that was kind of where we went first. And then she took us all over the place. And I think I've said this on the podcast before, but we went into where the Council of 12 have their offices, and we even went down the First Presidency Hall, and my kids mm-hmm. were super sweaty because we're desert people. And it was just, I was so worried that they weren't going to behave, you know, in front of like most of world church leadership. And, but it was great. And everyone was so loving and welcoming. And I was just so taken back at how much love there was for just this random family from Utah. And, you know, that's what the temple is just this all-encompassing love and sense of community. So
exactly. Yeah.
So with all of this, I guess in closing, I just want to talk a little bit about how the temple helps us grow, or how are we spiritually benefited, and with the symbolism of the Nautilus shell, you know, going inward and then outward again. So what does that outward process look like? What does the temple help us to become or to engage in mission, do you think?
Yeah, well, first of all, it really is that outward response of living your discipleship, you know, being called to respond that way. And that's one thing too that we didn't really mention in the temple. I love as you exit, one of the places you can exit the sanctuary takes you out onto that world plaza, because we are called to that ministry of the world. And that's just such an inspiring way to exit the temple and to see the world out there before you. So responding to your discipleship. You know, it's interesting because you would think that going into the temple, you know, would change us. But actually, I feel like the temples don't change us, but really, when we come into the presence of the divine, that's really what changes us. And so the temple to me is really a place for renewal. It's a place where we're called to experience life that, you know, really, I think the way that God has intended for us. And we're reminded to be in relationship with Christ, who calls us to respond, you know, to our true calling. So no matter who we are, where we come from, all the people who gather in the temple, everyone is there to share love. And we really share as we become community with anyone who enters the doors of, whether it's the temple, whether it's one of our congregational buildings, those who enter our lives. And the temple to me is really a place where we can deepen our faith in becoming a better disciple and discovering more about who we are in this faith movement that we call Community of Christ.
Oh, thank you. I think you,
thank you, Brittany,
summed it up perfectly. And yeah, I would just encourage, I guess, seekers to maybe study up a little bit on the Independence Temple, because I know that if you're anything like me, I had a little bit of anxiety about it, even knowing that they were completely different. But just the idea that that's how we find each other and we find ourselves and then engage in mission. I love that idea and that concept of what temple is. And I think that temple can be found, you know, the idea of temple can be found in a variety of places. But to have something specifically dedicated to the pursuit of peace and where we go out into the world, I think that's really special. So thank you, Bethany, for sharing your experiences.
Thank you so much. I've really appreciated this time to be with you.
The views expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official views of the Latter-day Seekers team or of Community of Christ. The music has been provided by Ben Howington. You can find his music at mormonguitar.com.